Hello and welcome to Animal Rights, the Evolutionist Approach Commentary. I'm Gary Francione. This is our 22nd No Frills, No Bells, No Whistles commentary concerning the abolition of animal exploitation, the failure of the animal welfare approach, veganism as the moral baseline of the animal rights movement, and creative, nonviolent vegan advocacy as the cornerstone of animal rights activism, and the principle of nonviolence, its general importance, and its role in all of our advocacy efforts. Well, in this commentary, we'll be talking about creative nonviolent vegan advocacy with a creative nonviolent vegan advocate, Layla Fussfeld, who is the president of the Peace Advocacy Network in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Layla will be joining us to talk about a project of the network called the Vegan Pledge. And I think you're going to be very excited to hear about this. I'm very, very happy about this new project. I think it has great potential to really get grassroots advocates mobilized and working in their communities to teach in a creative and nonviolent way the fundamental principles of veganism and abolition. So Layla will be joining us shortly. I wanted to make a couple of announcements before we talk with Layla. The first one is my new book, The Animal Rights Debate, Abolition or Regulation, which I co-authored with Professor Robert Garner of the University of Leicester in the United Kingdom, is now out. It was published several weeks ago by Columbia University Press, and I will let you know about upcoming interviews and events concerning the book. This past week, I discussed the book as part of a general interview that I did with Radioactive Lunch, which comes out of Vassar College and is on WVKR. 91.3 FM in the Mid-Hudson Valley, and I spent about a half an hour talking with the folks at Radioactive Lunch, and we discussed the book and a range of other topics. That is available. You can hear that by going to the website abolitionistapproach.com, clicking audio, and it's the first entry on the audio page, because it is the most recent one. In any event, so you can listen to that, and I'll let you know about upcoming events and interviews concerning the book as I find out about them. All right. The second thing I wanted to say is that our Abolitionist Approach discussion forum, which we started a few weeks ago, has now got almost 300 members. We have a wide range of discussions on the forum. If you want to talk about philosophy, you can talk about philosophy. If you want to talk about politics, you can talk about politics. You can talk about economics. You can talk about the practical strategies for vegan education. That's a big part of what people talk about on the forum. They also talk about vegan nutrition, about how to deal with how to talk to people about veganism, how to deal with family members, and et cetera, et cetera. They're just, as I say, there are 300 members almost now, and the discussions are wide-ranging. There are two rules for joining the forum: civil discourse and no promotion of violence. And those are the two rules. If you want to have uncivil discourse, or if you want to promote violence, there are plenty of places on the internet where you can do that, just not on the Abolitionist Approach forum. Okay, so check that out. You can access it by going to abolitionistapproach.com, and there is a red button called Abolitionist Approach Forum, which you can't miss. Press that, and you have to send some application and an introduction, and you get admitted, and then you can do what you want and talk about what you want, as long as you do it civilly and as long as you don't promote violence. All right. Now, before we get to Layla Fussfeld, let me say that when I did commentary number 20, which was an interview with Jeff Purse and Renata Peters, two abolitionist vegan advocates in Alice Springs, Australia, who are doing tremendous vegan outreach there, just tremendous work. And when I did that commentary, I said that I was hoping in future commentaries to focus, not exclusively, but heavily, on the efforts of grassroots advocates all over the world who are doing abolitionist vegan education. And I can tell you that the response that I got to the commentary in which I talked with Jeff and Renata was fabulous. People are obviously interested in this. They want to learn. They want to be able to do things like this in their communities, and that's what this is all about. It's all about education. And so, as I indicated in the last commentary, I expect to hook up with Jeff and Renata again soon to hear about other things that they're doing and the sorts of results that they're getting in terms of their efforts in Australia. And I'm in the process of lining up a number of nonviolent, creative, vegan advocates who are doing interesting things all over, and I will bring them to you in future commentaries. Okay, today in Commentary 22, we are talking to Leila Fussfeld, who is the president of the Peace Advocacy Network in Philadelphia, one of the main projects of which is something called Vegan Pledge. So welcome to the Abolitionist Approach Commentary, Leila. Thank you for being on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Now, tell me, please, what is the Peace Advocacy Network? Can you tell us what that's about? I like it because I like the idea of linking animal issues with the concept of peace. So tell us about it.
Well, Peace Advocacy Network is a grassroots organization run by all volunteers. We formed in February of this year, so we're relatively new. The idea behind it is encouraging people to make nonviolent choices with their lives. When some people might think we're an anti-war group, we don't focus any of our attention on the government's foreign policy, but rather we focus on individual peaceful choices, mainly diet, but also generally not using animals and not using or exploiting women or other social issues like issues of race in order to advance any other in order to advance the animal issues.
So you're focused on individual peaceful choices rather than policy issues.
Exactly. And we're trying to also bring together this idea that animal rights doesn't exist in a void, but rather is a social justice movement that is very well connected with other social justice movements, and we are, as we grow, hoping to get involved in other social justice movements.
And you're a relatively new organization.
Yes, we started in February of this year.
I see. Okay. Well, that's great. Well, all of that is music to my ears because I really think that speciesism is like racism, sexism, heterosexism, and other forms of discrimination. It's all violence. And if we take the message of animal rights seriously, we should be rejecting violence on those other areas as well. So I'm glad to see that your organization seems to subscribe to that viewpoint. Okay. Now tell us. Now I want to hear about what Vegan Pledge is about.
Sure. The Vegan Pledge is a brilliant idea that I did not come up with myself. A wonderful group of people in the UK came up with this idea. I read about it, and I thought it was fantastic, and I just had to set it in motion here. And what the idea is bringing together a group of people who want to go vegan but are a little bit nervous about really the day-to-day aspects of it. And we invite them to do this program. We make it completely free for them to really make it accessible to anyone. And
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me you don't charge money for this?
We do not charge money to the participants.
Wait a minute. Don't you know that's not the way to have an animal organization? I'm kidding. I'm being cynical. Yeah, so you don't charge people, and so the folks who participate in this are not asked for money.
No.
That's great.
When they're done, if they are able to make a contribution to kind of pay it forward, that would be much appreciated. But we want them to just enjoy their 30 days of their vegan trial so much that they want to stay vegan for life. So what we're doing is we are having every participant get a mentor, and that would be someone who has been vegan typically for at least a year. We let people decide whether they're comfortable being a mentor or not, but mentors don't have to know everything. They just have to be able to help their mentee find the resources to get the answers to any of their questions that come up. So they get a mentor, they get a little care package to start them off with, typically donated by companies. We're in the process of asking vegan companies to make a contribution of something, which is a great marketing opportunity for them because these people are, you know, for the first time focusing on vegan foods and getting a bunch of things put in front of their face. And then we give them these really great weekly meetings. And it's kind of like AA for former omnivores. But the general gist of the meetings is different seminars covering topics like nutrition, cooking, shopping, traveling, any Q&A type seminars. Those will be, we're always available to answer questions, but we'll dedicate special time for Q&A because everyone has different questions coming up. We will be doing, I hope, a seminar with you where you will very much encourage people to stay vegan for life and not even dream of going back to eating animal products and thinking that maybe humane animal products or so-called humane animal products are the right way to go. And our very last meeting will be a session on how to answer questions from omnivores. These are the typical questions of, you know, where do you get your protein, and the hypothetical where you're stranded on a deserted island and have nothing to eat but this cow, and somehow the cow has managed to survive on that island even though there's no vegetation that you could eat. And these are just the general types of issues that we're going into. And at the same time, we're also scheduling social events to try to bring these people into a vegan community. We have a pretty vibrant vegan community in Philadelphia. Lots of people love potlucks and vegan drinks events. So that just kind of brings them into this group of friends who will provide support to them for life. And
so let me see if I can. I think this is a terrific idea. I think this is an absolutely terrific idea on a number of different levels. First of all, it's being done by a group of volunteers. This is real grassroots activism. Secondly, it is not something that you're selling. You're providing a service to people, and this is not a this is not a gimmick. This is a real program. And from what I understand, so if I'm an omnivore and I hear about this and I'm interested. So you have me what sign up? I sign a pledge that I will be vegan for 30 days. Is that the idea? I commit myself in some way to do that.
Yeah, it's sort of like a contract. You commit to go vegan for 30 days in exchange for our support. We're only asking for 30 days. We don't want to intimidate anyone by insisting that it be the rest of their lives, but we...
You couldn't enforce that anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not shy about, you know, telling people that we really hope that they will stay vegan for life, but our immediate contract is a pledge to go vegan for 30 days in exchange for our support in doing that, the classes and...
Okay, so what would happen if I signed this? Now, first of all, this is a particular calendar period, right, that this thing goes?
Well, it depends on the location. Right now, for 2011, we are doing one in Philadelphia that starts, I believe, January 15th. If that's not the right day, it's the nearest Saturday to that. And one in Phoenixville that's on Sundays starting January 9th. And one in Baltimore that will be in... It will be mostly in March, but it starts the last weekend of February.
And these are all Peace Advocacy Network sponsored Vegan Pledge events.
Yes, in Baltimore, we are working in collaboration with a local group, and that's what we hope to do in other cities across the country. We would like to increase the number of pledges and expand across the country by working with local groups of vegan activists, whether they're formed as a nonprofit or not, and that way we have this collaboration that enables us to do it everywhere.
All right, so I want to get back to that in a little while, because I want to get back to this idea of collaboration, because I want to talk about how other people in other places can do this, can pick up this this program. All right, so if I were to enroll, if I hear about this and I'm interested and I enroll in the Philadelphia session that starts somewhere in the, you know, mid-January. And so what you would ask me to do is sign something that says in response or in return for the support and the educational services you're going to provide, I make a moral commitment to you that I'm going to be vegan for at least 30 days, correct? That's how it starts.
Yeah.
All right, now.
Yeah.
So then now I've signed this and I say, hey, this is really great. Okay, now what do I do tonight for dinner? I don't know what to eat that, you know, that isn't, that, you know, what do I eat? What do I do? I'm going to starve to death. You know, where am I going to get my protein from? I'm going to die. My arms and legs are going to fall off. I'm going to go blind. What
happens
next? Well, our
very first seminar is about easy vegan meals. So kind of some of the quick things that we've all learned to throw together when we can't figure out what to do. And they might not be the most beautiful and nutritious meal you've ever come up with, but it's just kind of a way to help people get through their first few days as they're adjusting. So we hope nobody would be panicking, but if they were, they could call their mentor.
Okay, so I assume that they would sign this pledge, or I would sign, if I were enrolled in this, I would sign the pledge on the day of the first seminar. So in other words, I don't sign this, you don't send this to me and I sort of sign it and then start off on my own. I come to some event, which is the first seminar, the first session, and I sign the pledge then, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then that first one is easy vegan meal so that I don't starve to death?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's part of it.
Okay. And what else? I mean, is there anything else that's part of that initial session?
There's a good portion devoted to question and answer that day and to really mingling and getting to know people and talking to each other. And that is also another good time to get their questions answered, because the first session is the one time where everyone will be there. All of the pledges will be there and all of the mentors will be there. So you can talk to your own mentor, you can talk to other mentors, you can tell people, you know, what you're nervous about, and they can help you calm down and give you some instruction on how to deal with the problem.
Okay. All right. So now I've left the meeting and I go home and I make something that you've recommended, you know, one of your easy vegan meals. By the way, you know, I don't want to put in a plug for raw here, but, you know, I've been eating not completely raw, but a great deal raw for the past several years. And I have to tell you, it's real easy to make stuff. I mean, unless you really want to get exotic. And if you want to get exotic and use dehydrators and things like that, which some people who are into raw do, and they make really interesting things, but you can eat raw pretty quickly. You can put something very nutritious together very, very quickly. And as somebody who doesn't, you know, I don't spend a lot of time preparing food, you know, you can make a lot of nutritious stuff very, very easily with very little preparation. And so I hope that there'll be some emphasis on that it's not just easy things that aren't particularly nutritious, but that you can make easy things that are actually very nutritious
sure.
Very,
like
very easily.
Veggies and hummus.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, like hummus, I don't know if hummus can be made raw, but salads. I mean, we're not anti-salad by any means.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, you can soak beans that you're going to. I mean, you don't need to cook beans, you know. But you can make things fairly easily. And even if you don't want to be completely raw, even if you want to use canned beans or something like that, that's fine, you know. But that's nutritious. That's not a non-nutritious way of eating. But anyway, all right. So I go home and I have one of the things that you've recommended that I eat, and I'm now eating a meal without animal products for the first time in my life. This is a real traumatic thing. I'm wondering whether or not I'm going to wake up dead, and I'm really nervous.
Well,
and
hold on. All of the omnivores have had vegan meals before in their lives, and hopefully it will not be their first vegan meal. I think a lot of people don't realize that they're eating a vegan meal. And they are.
I assume that most of the people who are going to show up for this are people who, they're not going to just wander in off the streets. I mean, these are people who are thinking about the issue. So I'm intentionally sort of characterizing the extreme case, the person who's really, really anxious, who's interested, wants to do it for whatever reason, but is anxious, really anxious. So that I get home that night, I make myself one of the meals that you've recommended, but I'm nervous and I'm concerned, and I have questions about whether I'm doing it right or whether or not I'm getting all the nutrients I need, or I'm worried I'm not going to have enough protein or whatever. And so I, at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock that night after my first seminar with you, I have questions. So what do? I call my mentor. Is that I have a mentor?
You call your mentor, or you email your mentor. I always welcome anyone in the program to call me at any time. There are a lot of people who are really invested in getting these people to go vegan, and we are all going to bend over backwards to make ourselves available to help.
Okay, so you can call your mentor, and then your mentor helps you through with any problems you have in that first week, and then you go back the second week, and what's the subject of the seminar the second week, the main subject?
It can vary, but the second week will probably involve a cooking class, and it will probably involve a nutritional seminar. We try to front-load the basics, to give people a good kickstart. So the most important aspects of the second week will likely be nutrition and cooking class.
Okay. And then again, people have their mentors who will help them between the second and third week. They come back the third week, and is there and I realize you may vary these things from program to program, but give me an idea, just a rough idea, just for people who are listening who have never heard this before. What sort of thing would happen in the third week? What sort of topic would you cover
The third week would probably be either another cooking class or the shopping class. And what the shopping class is, we would go to a health food store, probably a scene since it's a nice local one, and we will have lunch there, and we will break up into small groups, and whichever mentors or other volunteers are willing to do it, we'll lead a small group around the store, pick up some of the things that they typically purchase, talk about them, look at ingredients, help the new vegans understand the process of reading ingredients and any shortcuts that they might take to quickly identify something as, if it has cholesterol, you can put it down right away. Going through the whole store, maybe looking at some of the cleaning products and some of the personal care products, and generally showing people what it's like to go to the grocery store as a vegan.
Okay. Would you also take them to, many people are not going to have, Or I shouldn't say that, I guess. I don't really know. But I would imagine that at least some people are not going to have places like a scene or, whatever near them. And a scene, for those of you who are not familiar with the Philadelphia area, is a health food store. And I haven't been in it in years, but as I recall, it's fairly large. And it's got a pretty pretty big selection of stuff. But if you are not, if you don't have access to a place like a scene or some of the places that we have in New York City or other places, would you take someone through a regular sort of grocery store and help them identify vegan things?
I hadn't thought about doing a regular grocery store. We certainly could consider that, and that might even be something where, if there's a special circumstance, somebody's mentor would take them through a regular grocery store or accompany them on their regular grocery shopping trip. And even when we go through the supermarket trip at a scene, we would talk about which of those products might be readily available elsewhere or what might similar that they could find elsewhere.
One of the things I've done over the years is, with students who say, I'd love to go vegan, but I can't afford it, which is, that's a misconception. The idea that eating vegan is expensive only if you want to buy expensive vegan processed foods. And you can spend a lot of money on those things. And you can also, it's the easiest way to be an unhealthy vegan is eat a lot of processed foods, because first of all, processed foods as a general matter, as I'm sure you're aware, don't have a lot of nutritional value. And secondly, most of the time they have tons and tons and tons of salt. And so, eating those processed foods, those foods are expensive. I agree. And they're also deadly. So I actually stay away from those. But a lot of students have said, well, you know, I'd love to be vegan, but I can't afford to shop at, these more expensive health food places or whatever. And I've taken students to regular supermarkets and whatnot. And, it's easy. I mean, it's easy to get fruits, vegetables, and nuts just about anywhere you go. And also, to teach them a little bit about label reading and what you can, how you identify animal products on labels. And it's interesting, more and more now, in large supermarkets, not health foods, I mean, just traditional supermarkets, they are using the word vegan on products. And it's really interesting. I was in a large supermarket last week, and I saw in the section, their pasta section, they had their store brand of pasta, which they had labeled as vegan, and it was very inexpensive. And it was, and they just made it clear that there were no eggs or milk products in any of those pastas. And it was interesting. It was interesting to see. It is interesting to see to me how the chains, the large chains, are now starting to produce more food that they identify as vegan. I think that's a real change. But in any event, the third week is a shopping trip and more sort of nuts and bolts stuff. Then what happens when in the fourth week?
Then if we've done the shopping trip the third week, we would probably do another cooking class the fourth week, and then I would probably include a seminar about traveling while vegan, which would, involve talking about resources to use, planning ahead, and other useful tips on, finding some help, especially if you're going to like a foreign country and don't know the language, how to make sure ahead of time that you're going to be prepared to stay vegan for that vacation or work trip.
And do you have now? Is there any class in which you discuss philosophy, as it were, the philosophy of veganism? Why people ought to be vegan as a moral matter? Why veganism is important? Why happy meat is not a good idea? Why cage-free eggs is not a good is not really an option if you care. It's not a choice of cage-free eggs or battery eggs. It's a question of no eggs. Do you get into that sort of topic at all?
We are planning on doing that, and I was hoping that you would kindly agree to take over that seminar for us. I think that would be.
I would be delighted. I would be absolutely delighted to do that. I mean, I really think that this is the sort of thing. When I talk about creative, nonviolent vegan education, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I talked with Jeff Purz and Renata Peters, who live in Alice Springs, Australia, and we talked about some of the things that they were doing, I won't say daily emails, but almost daily emails from Renata about the various successes that they're having and how easy it is. As a matter of fact, I got one from her this morning that she is just absolutely flabbergasted at how easy it is to get people to go vegan and, to have conversations with people that lead them to the decision that, yeah, this makes perfect sense. They do care about animals. They do regard animals as members of the moral community. And, darn it, they really can't come up with a good justification for why they're eating them, their flesh, or their products. And so she's having the experience of seeing how people are really quite amenable to being educated about veganism. And And I think that something like the Vegan Pledge is just terrific because it's a different form of advocacy, but where you're engaging the person over the period of a month. They've got a mentor to answer questions, to deal with things that come up, but they've also got these weekly meetings, and I assume that they also are linked in to a support network of other people who are doing this, so they can socialize, and in between sessions, if they want, they can go to a vegan restaurant for dinner or go to each other's houses and experiment with some of the recipes that you are recommending that they prepare. So you know, I think that this is really terrific, and I will be supportive in any way I can. Let me also ask you this. Now, all right, let's assume that somebody is listening to this, and they say, gee, you know, this is great. I'd love to do this. You know, what they're doing in Philadelphia, I'd like to do here in San Diego. How do I do this? What do I do? How does one do this? So tell me.
You mean a vegan who would like to set one up, or you mean a non-vegan who would like to participate?
Well, now that's interesting. I had my question, in asking you the question, what I had intended was somebody who's a vegan who wants to do this as part of his or her creative nonviolent vegan advocacy. You know, they want to do what Layla Fussfeld is doing in Philadelphia. But also, what about somebody who hears about this and says, gee, you know, this would be the way I'd love to. I'd go vegan if only I had a support network like this, if I had somebody I could call, if I had, you know, some weekly meetings and things like that. So I guess in a sense, the impulse is the same, irrespective of whether it's coming from an established vegan or somebody who wants to go vegan. What they want to do is they want to have something like this in their area. How do they do it? What do they do?
Well, the first thing that somebody should do is contact me. I'm very accessible by email, and my email address is on our website.
Your website will be on the blog post that accompanies this podcast, but please give it to everybody now.
Sure. It is www.peaceadvocacynetwork.org. None of it is spelled funny or uses any numbers or anything. And so anybody who wants to set one up, preferably people who do not promote cage-free eggs or any of the confusing stuff. We really want to work with hardcore vegan activists who, you know, have a very clear message and will give a very clear presentation to these brand new vegans. So someone who is listening to this probably fits into that category and should get in touch with me, and we'll talk about, you know, what will be required to have this collaboration to work with, you know, the local activists working with Peace Advocacy Network to set up a very similar program there. And we have a handbook that I put together that really, I think, simply explains the different aspects of it and what is needed in order to make it happen. It's definitely a lot of work, but it's really very rewarding. And even more so than simply convincing someone of the need to go vegan, this is a really great way to, you know, have people who are right there appreciative from the start of what from the start of the program, they're appreciative of what you're doing to help them. So it's not the same kind of uphill battle that we face when we're out there doing the normal types of advocacy that we do to try to get people to go vegan. It's almost like a break from that, despite being a lot of work. Not to denigrate the very important part of convincing them to go vegan, just in one sense, it's easier.
Well, but as you point out, it's labor intensive in another way. In that it requires a lot more coordination than some of the other sort of direct advocacy things that people can do in terms of setting up a stall and talking. But, you know, if you're doing a stall with yourself or another person, then you coordinate yourself and the other person. And again, that's hard work because you're dealing with people, you're having conversations with people, many of whom have never thought about this, and so you get a lot of weird reactions, and that dynamic can sometimes be difficult, and it's always challenging. exhausting. It's often very draining, and sometimes
it is. And it's also actually, I shouldn't have separated it so much from the Vegan Pledge. Every time we have a vegan outreach table, that's lowercase v, lowercase o, to be clear, we put out a sign-up sheet for the Vegan Pledge, which just has a brief explanation of what it is and says, sign your name and email address to get more information as it approaches. So we have, you know, all year round, if we convince someone that they should consider veganism, we take down their name, and we're actually, I'm about to get in touch with all those people this week and ask them whether they're ready to sign up.
I see. I see. So that, all right. So actually it does, the Vegan Pledge approach does involve sort of the direct one-on-one business as well. so you don't really escape it. I agree with you, by the way, that that you ought to keep Vegan Pledge as a vegan enterprise and not something where people are talking about cage-free eggs or humane this or humane that. I mean, obviously, if people are going to set these things up, they're going to do whatever they're going to do. But, I mean, I think what you're
doing... Well, we will not put the peace advocacy name on a Vegan Pledge that does not 100% promote veganism, and I don't think we would even be comfortable with partnering with people who were, on the one hand, willing to do a vegan pledge, but on the other hand, going out into the world and sending a confusing message, because that confusing message would come back to the pledge. It's not like these people participating aren't going to know what's being said outside of it. We want a very clear message.
That's good.
But it's
that's
about
good.
Veganism.
That's good. Clarity is really important. Clarity is extremely important. And now, let me ask you this: How do you find? I mean, I would imagine. I mean, that the challenge of setting something like this up is, you know, you produce your, you know, you get your booklet together and you get your materials together, but you also have to get a group of mentors, and you have to get a group of people who know how to cook, and you have to get people who are knowledgeable about nutrition to give lectures. You have to get other sorts of resource people. How does one go about identifying mentors and other support people in the area?
Well, if you're active in a vegan social community, it's usually pretty easy. I'm not worried about finding mentors at all. I think vegans get really excited about this sort of thing, and if anything, we might have more mentors than we need. Occasionally, I've had people say that they're vegan, but they're not comfortable being a mentor because they don't think they know all the answers, and that's really easy because I don't know all the answers. You don't have to know all the answers. You just have to be, you know, a warm and friendly person to your mentee and be willing to help them find the answers, and we can all do that.
How do you deal with the problem or the potential problem of a mentor who gets called from a mentee who says, gee, you know, I'm going to be going shopping tomorrow, and I'm going to buy some happy eggs or happy milk or, you know, whatever. And what are the mentors all trained to sort of discuss with the students or whatever the pledges or whatever they're called? Are they sort of trained in terms of how they respond to questions like that, so that you don't have mentors saying, oh, well, you know, if you're going to eat some eggs, buy happy eggs or something like that?
It is made very clear to everyone who participates, whether they're a mentor or a participant, that this is about not consuming any animal products at all. And there is no doubt that no matter how, you know, well marketed, I should say, the animal products that they might be looking at are, they're an animal product, it's exploitive, and it's not an acceptable part of the pledge. And the mentors would explain that. Obviously, they can't go and physically, you know, run to the grocery store and prevent it from happening, but hopefully that the people who have signed up to participate in the pledge are genuinely committed to doing it.
Okay. Let me ask you, I'm sorry to be interrogating you this way, but you know, I mean, I'm trying to, you know, I mean, I think this is a terrific idea. I really do. I think this is an absolutely terrific idea, and I'm very, very excited about it because this sort of thing has the potential Imagine how great it would be if in another few years there are Peace Advocacy Network sponsored vegan pledges in every major city in the United States and in a few smaller places. Imagine what that could do in terms of.
I'm very ambitious.
Well, there you go. This is just a terrific program. Now, people go vegan for different reasons. I have always taken the position that what keeps you vegan is an ethical commitment to nonviolence, because to the extent that you go vegan for health reasons, for example, I don't know that I've ever really known anybody who stays vegan or who's conscientiously vegan for health reasons alone. And it makes perfect sense to me. That is, however convinced you are, however committed you are to your health, people cheat. And so somebody can say, well, I really don't believe in eating fried foods because they're not good for my health, which is true. But they say, well, but occasionally I cheat. I know it's not good for me, but I'll go to a restaurant and I'll eat something fried. And I just think that's the case for almost everybody. If you do something for health reasons, the norm is, well, you do it for health reasons, but most of the time, people who do things for health reasons will cheat. There may be some exceptions to that. You might say, well, I'm not going to smoke cigarettes because that's a peculiar behavior, which. You don't just sort of dabble in. You either smoke or you don't, for the most part. But people who say, well, I'm not going to eat for health reasons, I'm not going to eat animal foods, will cheat or are likely to cheat. Similarly, people who do things for environmental reasons, they say, well, I'm not going to eat animal products because bad for the environment. Well, that's also true. But they might say, well, but gee, almost everything I do is bad for the environment. That's also true. And so therefore, I'm going to cheat a little bit because I'm not going to drive for the next several days, but I'm going to eat some animal products. So it all balances out in the end. So my view is look, I always talk about health and I always talk about the environment, but I make it very clear that the thing that keeps you vegan and the real reason to go vegan is because you don't believe in treating animals as things, because you regard them as members of the moral community, and because you oppose violence and you oppose violence and the commodification of animals, and that means at the very least you don't eat them, wear them, consume them, whatever, on an individual basis. You don't participate directly in that form of exploitation. But to what extent is Vegan Pledge a focus on the ethical aspects of veganism as opposed to health aspects or environmental aspects?
It is almost exclusively, well, not almost exclusively, it is very largely focused on the practical aspects of it. We're generally hoping to be dealing with people for this program who have already made a decision to go vegan. We will no doubt get the most success from people who have made that as an ethical decision. Success in terms of staying vegan past the 30 days. And I do not disagree with you that people are very much inclined to cheat if it's a health fad or if it's an environmental concern that they can balance out against other environmental things or unenvironmental things that they might do or give up.
It's funny. I have a friend who's been a dietary vegan for many years, and he's conscientious about it most of the time, but he will cheat. Now and then he will go to a restaurant and he'll eat, he'll eat something like a dressing that's got eggs in it or something like that, or, egg yolk in it or milk or something like that. But he's a vegan for health reasons. has been a vegan for has been a dietary vegan for health reasons for many years. And but yet, you know, I mean, this is somebody who's really committed and really believes this stuff is bad for you, but will occasionally eat an animal product on the theory that, well, you know, I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to die of something someday, so a little bit of cheating isn't going to kill me. And I also know people, I've met people over the years who say things, who actually say things like, well, you know, I'm not going to drive my car for 2 days, or I live, this is something I hear a great deal. People say, well, you know, I live in New York. I don't have a car. I take public transportation. So my car, you know, my carbon footprint is actually smaller than most people's who drive cars. And so therefore, you know, I am concerned about this issue primarily environmentally. So I avoid animal products to a large degree, but you know, what the hell? I mean, I'm actually doing a great thing by not engaging in animal exploitation, and I'm sorry, in environmental insults in my daily lifestyle. So it's okay for me to occasionally eat animal products. So, you know, I mean, I always try to make it clear that, you know, that you know, there are health dimensions to it. There are environmental dimensions, and the environmental, both the environmental dimensions and the health dimensions, also have moral aspects to them. I mean, for example, when we talk about the environment, it's not just a question of you know, what you're doing to trees or what you're doing to water. It's what you're doing to the animals who live in the environment, etc. So, you know, there are moral dimensions to it, but that ultimately the thing is a moral question. And what I hear you saying is that at least until evidence refutes evidence proves otherwise to you, you're assuming that most of the people who are going to be doing the vegan pledge are people who've already made the ethical decision.
They've already made the decision. They don't necessarily tell us. We will be providing them on the first day with, or possibly a few days in advance, with a questionnaire that asks them some things about why they're doing the vegan pledge. I guess perhaps further in advance than the first day, because we are going to use this questionnaire to best match them up with a suitable mentor, somebody who has had a similar experience. And I do believe, although I don't have it in front of me, that one of the questions asks them why they are participating. So we may get a better sense of who will do it for environmental reasons, health reasons, or ethical reasons. And to the extent that we can bring them into the community and engage them in our discussions, in addition to your talk, we may change their reasons or their. I mean, I'm certainly conscious of my health, although I guess less conscious than I should be, and very much an environmentalist, in addition to caring about the rights of animals not to be exploited. So it doesn't have to be just one or the other. And so if somebody's concerned about the environment, I would encourage them to be concerned about the interests of animals as well.
Right. I mean, look, I'd be more than happy, and we can talk at some point. I'd be more than happy to develop some curricular materials, not only for the session that you're doing that I'll come and speak at personally, but that for materials that you are developing for other places in the country and in other countries that you're working on. I mean, why not go international? You said you're ambitious. Be international.
I'm working from Philadelphia out. Once we get the whole country covered, then perhaps Canada and Mexico would be next. The UK, I'm not going to step on any of the brilliant toes of the UK founders. They're doing a fabulous job. They've been doing it since 2008. But I would very much like to see it, you know, grow as much as possible.
That's great. No, I think that's terrific. But I'll help you develop, if you'd like, some curricular materials that you can include so that you can sort of get the discussion focused on the reasons for going vegan and what veganism means, both from an ethical point of view and how the ethical issue interrelates with the health and the environmental arguments. But in any event, a final thing I want to ask you about is people are going to go to this website. They're going to go to give it again. It's
peaceadvocacynetwork.org.
Okay, so they're going to go to this website and they're going to see the vegan pledge, and then they're also going to see other things that, you know, it's a young organization, it's just formed, and they're going to see that you have a commitment to basically nonviolence and that you're opposed to exploitation and individual acts of exploitation and how those things promote violence. But They're also going to see that you have a single-issue campaign on carriage horses in Philadelphia. And I'm sort of curious because you and I have talked about the issue of about the issue of single-issue campaigns, and I'm sort of curious as to what your thinking is about the Philadelphia carriage horse campaign, and how do you address the arguments that single-issue campaigns make us think that other forms of animal exploitation are okay, and they really sort of and that certain things are worse than other things, and whatnot, you know, all the things that I and others have been saying over the years about single-issue campaigns. How do you address that? And I'm asking that because what's going to happen is people are going to go there and they're going to see this, and then they're going to think I've changed my mind about single-issue campaigns. I haven't. I swear I haven't. But please tell me what your thinking is about that.
Sure. Well, we view single-issue campaigns as an educational opportunity, and not just an educational opportunity about that exploitive practice, so the carriage horse industry, but also about veganism. So whenever we do these horse-drawn carriage protests, we are giving out literature that explains what's wrong with horse-drawn carriages, which, you know, of course, you're exploiting animals for economic profit. And in our literature, we ask people to please consider, you know, now that they've considered the carriage horses, please take another step and consider all of the animals that are being exploited for food, for clothing, for animal experimentation, and to, you know, consider going vegan. And we straightforwardly say that we promote veganism as our moral imperative, not just a boycott of the carriage horse industry and you've done your good deed for the day, but you really need to be considering these other issues. And what I like about the carriage horse campaign, and you're free to disagree with me, but we're standing there, we're right in front of horses that are very clearly being exploited for profit. And most people don't encounter that very regularly. And these horses don't look like they're suffering particularly miserably. So we're not saying, you know, look, the horse is bleeding, look how injured he is and he's still being made to work. We're saying this horse is being used and that's not okay. And it's a very easy way to show people that connection and then hopefully bring them along for the rest of the ride. And we keep vegan literature at our table.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I generally think single-issue campaigns are a problem. But my primary issue, my two primary issues are that, one, vegan advocacy is more effective than single-issue campaigns. Single-issue campaigns tend to use a lot of resources, and they don't really get you all that far, even if they succeed, and most of them don't. But also because I think single-issue campaigns tend to give people the wrong impression. They tend to focus people's attention on a particular form of exploitation as if this is somehow worse than what else is going on, and you don't really get people to see the big picture. I've always said, you know, I don't like single-issue campaigns, but if you're going to do them in the context of vegan education and abolitionist education, where you're being really clear. You're saying, look, you know, here is the situation right in front of you. We really ought to address it, but we ought to address all these other issues too. And I like the way you put it. You don't just do your good deed for the day by signing some sort of petition or agreeing that you're not going to get into the carriage and have a ride around Philadelphia, but that you're going to but that, you know, you're going to be thinking about some other things like veganism and like abolishing all animal exploitation. So in that sense, I find that a lot more understandable in terms of why, what your strategy is, whether I would do it or not and when I was younger, I was involved in the carriage horse campaigns in New York. It's just they so clearly and so quickly became single issue in the worst sense of the word, in that, you know, they became a at least for a number of advocates, it became a campaign unto itself, and you know, focused on carriage horses rather than the bigger picture, and rather than veganism as an answer to animal exploitation as a general matter. So I do understand why you're doing that, and the way you're doing it, it may in fact be a useful and productive educational enterprise. Single issue campaigns are really detrimental unless the only way they cannot be detrimental is if you do them in the way that you're doing them. So I'm cautiously sympathetic there, and
I think that's the best I'm going to get out of you.
Yes, well, that probably is the best you're going to get out of me. I mean, but I do like what you're doing. I asked the question because I wanted you to have a chance to address that, because it's an issue that will come up. I guarantee you, I will get emails about it. But it's also clear from your website that what your position is. And now that you're telling me that, when you have these protests or whatever you have, you're handing out literature, which makes it clear that you don't think that this form of exploitation is any different from any other form of exploitation. You're just using it as a very direct teaching opportunity to talk about animal exploitation as a general matter and to talk about veganism. That's very different. Single issue campaigns don't do that. By and large, as a matter of fact, of all the single issue campaigns that I'm familiar with that are going on right now, with the anti-fur campaign being the prime example, they don't even get beyond fur generally. I mean, they're focused on fur, as if fur is different from wool or leather or silk, or using animals for clothing is different from using them for food or entertainment or other forms of exploitation. So, it by and large, single issue campaigns fall into the trap, but they fall into the trap because they are designed to be commodities that these organizations can sell to bring in money. Your organization is not a your organization is an organization of volunteers. It's not a bunch of people who are trying to make a living off of doing this, but rather a group of volunteers.
Nobody's being paid, and most of us are not being reimbursed.
Well, there you go. I know that may be. Problematic in different respects. I understand that, and I understand that people have limited resources. But I can assure you of one thing: that's the only way this works. That once it becomes a business, then decisions are made for business purposes, and then you end up having carriage horse protests where you talk about carriage horses rather than the larger issues, or rather than veganism. So, in any event, well, I want to thank you very, very much. Again, give it to us again. Tell us again the website.
www.peaceadvocacynetwork.org.
Okay, and people can click on Vegan Pledge and get information about Vegan Pledge on the blog post that will accompany this podcast. I've given the links to the Peace Advocacy Network site, as well as to the forms that you fill out to send in to Layla and her colleagues, indicating interest that you want to participate either as a student or as a mentor. And I very, very much appreciate your spending time with me talking about this. I want to encourage people to go to www.peaceadvocacynetwork.org and get information about Vegan Pledge and the other programs that Peace Advocacy Network is engaged in. As I said, it's a young organization, but it's a young organization starting with the right ideas, the idea that violence is the problem, it's not the solution, and trying to encourage people as a general matter not to exploit non-humans and other humans. So thank you, Layla Fussfeld, and all of your colleagues at Peace Advocacy Network. I look forward to coming and speaking as part of your program. I will be delighted to do so, and as I said, I'll help you, if you wish, develop some curricular materials that you can include in your packet to get people focused on the issues. So, in any event, thanks a lot for listening to Commentary 23, where we are continuing to talk with grassroots abolitionist advocates. No, this is Commentary 22. I'm sorry, Commentary 22, where we are continuing to talk with vegan abolitionist advocates about what they're doing in terms of creative, nonviolent vegan education. And today we had Leila Fussfeld. If you're not vegan, if you are not vegan, why not? Why aren't you vegan? It's easy. It's incredibly easy. It's better for your health. It's better for the environment. And the most and most important, it's the morally right. It's the just thing to do. It's a matter of what we owe to non-human animals. And it's not just a matter of compassion. It's a matter of justice. It's what we owe to them. So if you believe that animals are members of the moral community, I hate to tell you this. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you don't really have a choice. If you regard animals as members of the moral community, you go vegan. So thank you very much for listening. Visit the website www.abolitionistapproach.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, or you can go to the Facebook site Abolitionist Approach, the Abolitionist Approach Facebook site, and I will look forward to Commentary 23. Thank you all. Bye-bye.